the Shore Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom, everybody. I'm Bill Cloud, and welcome to this week's Torah Tidbit, which is taken from the Torah portion called Korach. Korach, of course, is the name given to one of Scripture's most notorious villains. This is the man who, along with others, led a revolt against Moses and Aaron, and most importantly, against the God of Israel. Now, as is the case with most villains, his end, and those who joined him, was not a happy one. And so the portion begins in Numbers 16, verse 1, saying this, "Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown." In the last portion, if you recall, the people had threatened to appoint a captain to lead them back to Egypt. But in this Torah portion, instead of complaining about a particular issue, whether it was lack of water, lack of food, not the right kind of food, the people began to rebel outright, and in general, attempted to overthrow Moses and Aaron amid accusations of the abuse of power and nepotism. Now, it seems to me that there could be many issues that contributed to this rebellion, but the main and primary one seems to be jealousy. Remember that before the golden calf incident, the Bible is very clear that the firstborn of Israel from all tribes were to be dedicated as priests unto the Lord. However, because of the sin of the golden calf, the tribe of Levi was singled out as God's ministers, and specifically the sons of Aaron were set apart as the Kohanim, or the priests, thus replacing the firstborn. And as it turns out, Korah and the 250 leaders of the congregation were firstborn. Dathan and Abiram were from the tribe of Judah, and that was the son of Jacob who had lost his firstborn status because of gross misconduct to the tribe of Joseph. So then, how is it that these two groups joined forces, so to speak? Understand that Korah was of the tribe of Levi, specifically the family of Kohath. And that means that his family group camped south of the tabernacle. Also, the camp of Reuben. It was also situated south of the tabernacle. Meaning then that these two groups, the Kohathites and the Reubenites, were in close proximity to each other. In short, they may have found something in common with one another. They both felt that they had been slighted. They both felt that others were in charge when they should be in charge. And so this close proximity gave them opportunity to compare notes. Now, as a footnote to this close association, when Israel came into the land of Canaan, these two tribes were parted from one another. The Levites were dispersed among the many tribes of Israel, and Reuben was situated across the River Jordan, and so consequently, on the outskirts of the people. Now, tradition says that Korah tried to show that the laws Moses instituted were too difficult and too hard, and so Korah made an attempt to grab power by pretending to be an advocate for the people. So it is with most rebels. They pretend to represent the interests of the people at large, but in reality, all they're doing is seeking power for themselves. So Korah, joined with the princes of the congregation, rose up in the face of Moses. Now, it seems obvious to me that in obtaining the cooperation of these 250 prestigious men, that was an attempt to give credibility to his rebellion. Still, the fact that he rose up in the face of Moses reveals his true intent. He was, in fact, a rebel. The Hebrew term that is translated in the face of is lifne, and is the same Hebrew term used when speaking of the rebel king Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, or really, literally, the mighty hunter in the face of the Lord. The point is that Nimrod was in opposition to God, just as Korah was in opposition to Moses. And consequently, because God had chosen Moses and Aaron for specific tasks, Korah and those who joined him were in opposition to God as well. The Bible makes it clear that Korah is to be associated with the likes of other rebels, men such as Cain and Balaam. And when it comes to the 250 princes, I think it's important to note that they were called men of renown. This term is the same one that is found in Genesis chapter 6 that describes the Nephilim, or the giants, a group of men who are associated with the corruption and the rebellion that eventually resulted in the great flood. And so then, that brought the destruction of the world that was. So in other words, the men of renown in both cases led people to rebel against God's purpose, and in both cases, those who submitted to their leadership died. Now, it's my opinion that one of Korah's errors in judgment was failing to recognize that some were set apart by God from those he had already set apart. In other words, the priests, the Kohanim, were distinguished for service in a manner that the Levites were not, even though the Levites themselves were set apart from the rest of the congregation of Israel. But Korah's inability, or maybe even unwillingness to acknowledge this, I believe comes out and is made evident in his accusation against Moses in verse 3. Korah says this to Moses and to Aaron, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" So it seems to me that what we have here is a classic example of someone who is not content with what God has given him to do. It's an example of one who is not willing to function in their God-intended purpose, but feels that they are to assume the role that was given to someone else. Korah and the other Kohathites were given the responsibility, you might even say the privilege, of transporting the holy furniture, which would include the Ark of the Covenant and other things, to transport these things when the tabernacle was disassembled. Still, Korah was the type of person who just couldn't bear feeling that there was someone else who might be considered more important than he. And the sad part about that is he couldn't, apparently anyway, recognize the importance of performing the task that God had given him to do. I think it's important to keep this in mind because there are those even today who, like Korah, feel that their gifts and their talents are better suited for what they want to do and consequently aren't content with carrying the Ark of the Covenant. No, they have to be in charge, and to that end will rail accusations against God, against those that God has chosen for other tasks, tasks that the Korahs of this world desire for themselves. In other words, Korah's statement was his way of saying that he wanted the position of leader for himself. Moses realized this, and he turned Korah's words against him, saying, "You take too much upon you, sons of Levi." Now, it's interesting to consider that Korah was actually related to Moses. They were kinsmen. They were both of the tribe of Levi. And I find that interesting because, in my opinion, most of the attacks that God's people must learn to endure doesn't generally come from the outside, but from the inside. Or we'll put it this way, most attacks come from those who are supposed to be our brethren. I mean, think about it this way. One of the main reasons that Moses fled from Egypt was because his own brethren publicized the fact that he had killed an Egyptian taskmaster. If you consider the early believers in Messiah and the attacks that they suffered, for the most part, they came at the hands of their kinsmen and their fellow countrymen, not the Romans and not the idolaters. It was his own kinsmen, specifically Dathan and Abiram, that said this to Moses in verses 13 and 14. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you should keep acting like a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards." And so, ladies and gentlemen, they're accusing Moses, and by extension, they're accusing God of bringing them into the wilderness just to lord over them and then kill them. The irony of the situation is God brought them out of a land, not of milk and honey, but of bondage and certain death in order to save them. But due to their rebellion, their jealousy, they ended up killing themselves. That is always the outcome of rebellion, death. And so it was when Korah assembled all of the congregation against them at the door of the Mishkan, or the tabernacle, the Bible tells us that the ground opened up and it swallowed Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and all those who were in their company, taking them and everything pertaining to them alive into Sheol. And a fire went out from the presence of God and consumed the 250 men of renown in a fashion that's very similar to the deaths of Nadab and Avihu, those who offered profane fire. And so then we see that when their destruction came, it was obviously God's doing, because it seems that the vindication of Moses and Aaron as those that God had chosen to lead had to be complete and without any question. Now, in my estimation, Korah's rebellion is equivalent to, first of all, not believing or respecting the one that God has appointed to lead. Secondly, it was attempting to replace those God had chosen by accusation and under the guise of being a faithful representative of the people. Thirdly, it is equivalent to not being content with what God has given a person to do, and furthermore, being jealous of what God has appointed others to do. And in the end, the results of this kind of rebellion is not good, and no one wins. So what does this say to you and me? I think the lesson is clear, frankly. That is, don't repeat the mistakes of Korah. Keeping in mind, it is very easy to convince ourselves of our own worth, while at the same time highlighting the negative aspects and attributes of others. You see, we have to keep our eyes on the Messiah and His purpose for us, and not be so concerned about what He has given others to do. I'm reminded of what Yeshua told Peter, who, after learning what death he was going to suffer, he chose to focus on another disciple, and he began to inquire what was to become of him. In Bill's blunt translation, Yeshua tells him, "It's really none of your business, Peter. You are to follow me." I think it's important to pay close attention, ladies and gentlemen, to those we associate with. In other words, if we are in close proximity to people who have a chip on their shoulder, if we're hanging around those who are always tearing down instead of building up, if we're hanging around those who are always angry, discontented, and critical of others, there's a chance that we might fall victim to their anger and to their critical ways if we're not being very careful. You see, the danger of hanging with the wrong crowd is to potentially find ourselves joined with rebels and in the face of those God has appointed, and more importantly, in the face of God Himself. If we find ourselves in that type of situation, perhaps we should take a lesson from the sons of Korah. Though there were sons of this man who separated themselves unto God and consequently survived. In fact, they went on to later write many of the Psalms. And finally, I'm going to leave you with the wisdom that was offered to the Jewish leaders of long ago, these leaders who, in the name of God, were coming against the followers of Yeshua with accusations and threats of death. And so it was to those men that the revered sage Gamaliel said this in Acts chapter 5, beginning in verse 38. "Keep away from these men and let them alone. For if this plan or if this work is of men, it will come to nothing. But if it is of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest you even be found to fight against God." And so what we find, ladies and gentlemen, through this Torah portion and everything we've discussed is that hanging out with the wrong crowd can be hazardous to your health. And so it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we're not listening to those who are critical, negative, and wanting to tear down all the time, because they have the ability, as we see, to influence others to join with them in rebellion. And the end is not good. Thanks for joining me this week for our Torah Tidbit, and we're looking forward to seeing you next time. Until then, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.